Have you noticed that? That the good guys aren't as good as they used to be. Because maybe, those really goody-goody ones, and now we're loading the language, right? They're just kind of goody-two-shoes. They're not very realistic. They're not very real or believable. Okay, that's not necessarily wrong, but now we're lifting up ugliness to be something good. And something can only be good or true or real if we inject, lots and lots of ugliness into it. A movie is only real unless it has lots of realistic, ugly, vulgar language. Otherwise, it's not a real movie anymore. And people are rejecting it in those sorts of ways. Today's virtues, right? What are the virtues that are lifted up? They're the ones that the Bible has been pushing down, right? Think about any TV show about a crime. Turns out the good guys that are trying to get the bad guys are just about as bad. Or sometimes the crime shows are more about the ugly murderer than it is about the good guys trying to stop it. We're kind of getting in a weird spiral here. And then there's the politicians and the politics today, right? Today's politicians encourage breaking laws and rules because the other side does it. Or we encourage our politicians to break the rules because the other side is doing it. And that's just bad. And both sides are trying to engage in that. Christians must not love these things. Instead, we're going to be persecuted because we're standing up for good stuff. We can't love those ugly things, but it's going to exhaust us, right? Our heart is going to sink because our worldview is under fire. The worldly love goes against godly love. And if we try to speak about godly love, now our speech is hate speech, and we're living in a complicated time. And so far, we haven't even gotten to Jesus' part about the stones getting knocked off of each other. So this is why I think that we need to, these are the things that we as Christians need to think about and focus on. Not double down on the world so nasty. Because we're just going to get ourselves angry and depressed. But we do need to open up our eyes to the fact that the world is nasty so that we can respond in the right way. And the right response is in verse 13. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. And there's two ideas here. You need to endure to the end, and you will be saved. The Christian race is a marathon. It ain't a sprint. It's not about showboating. It's, will you be able to run for the rest of your life? And if you had to start running today, how fast would you run if you knew you were never allowed to stop running? Like, look at me go! And everyone else is saying, man, that's foolishness. Slow down. Take care of yourself, because this is a long haul as a Christian. And the one who endures to the end will be saved. That means we're saved at the end. Okay, yes, you're full of sin, you're baptized, and you're saved at baptism. But there's also this, the one who endures until the end will be saved. That's another salvation, right? That's the saints who are in the book of Revelation saying, oh Lord, how long? Oh, they're saved. But they're kind of asking, Lord, how much longer this are you going to let us deal with until we're saved? And he says, a little bit longer. So we can be saved from our sins and still wait for the salvation of God. And when does the salvation of God come? Not Thursday. Not even in a week. It's when we're done. Well, when are we done? When you're done. It's a long haul. And that's exhausting. And that's why Jesus is saying, the one who endures unto the end. We need to be praying, not get me out of this mess. Help me through it. That's not a 100% Bible truth. There are plenty of times that the people in the Bible pray, get me out of this mess. But for the point of this lesson, we need to recognize that we won't get taken out of every hot mess we find ourselves in. We need to be praying, help me get through this. Because we don't get the magic wand waving all of our troubles away. The answer for the Jewish Christians when they saw the destruction of Jerusalem on the horizon, the answer Jesus gave them was, get up and run. That's not it. That doesn't sound good. No. They're still going to have to work at that. We also need to understand that our circumstances can't change it. We got to be solid Christians when the going is good. We got to be solid Christians when the going is rough. The parable of the talents talks about someone who's given one, someone who's given two talents, and someone who's given five talents. Of course the five-talent person is going to do great because they got five talents. I'm only given one talent. How can I possibly do any good? How can I do anything of worth? And I love to think about the two-talent person. The two-talent person barely had anything more than the one-talent person. Barely. They doubled their money. They doubled their money, and when they had doubled their money, it still wasn't as much as the five-talent person when he began. So that still means it's not really that big, but they did as much work as the five-talent person. They doubled their money. They doubled their money. And so my circumstances are going to be hard. My circumstances are going to be awful. Or not. But my circumstances don't get to dictate how much I'm going to do for God. And that was one of the lessons that Matt was talking about this morning. I can't just say, well, things are too hard for me now. Then we get the parable of the sower. In Matthew chapter 13 and verse 21, it's talking about the seed that fell among the rocks and it grew up really fast and then died quick. It says he had no root in himself. And he endures for a while, but when tribulation arises, think about this. The plant is complaining because the sun is out. Should the plant pray, dear God, take the sunshine away? Plant's going to die. Now, in the parable of the sower, the soils don't necessarily have their own ability to fertilize themselves and take the rocks out, right? That's where that parable breaks down. And we need to be doing the work of taking the rocks out of, you know, or maybe helping our sisters and brothers take the rocks out and weed their gardens, right? That's where we kind of need to tweak the parable of the sower because the dirt can't change itself and we need to make some changes. But that's the point here. Your circumstances are out of your control, but they don't dictate what you ought to be. God dictates what you ought to be. And you know what? Sometimes God gives you circumstances that maybe you don't deserve, but they're what you have. What about all those Jewish Christians in Jerusalem? Did they deserve to have their city destroyed by Rome? But they had to live with that. They had to live with that. And so Jesus gave them a heads up and told them what they needed to do. And the most important thing he said was, you need to endure to the end and then you can be saved. Another idea is that we need to not let other people's failures dictate our behavior. And it's one thing to not let the failures of our presidents, I put that in plural, y'all. I don't care which one you're thinking about. Maybe you have a big beef against Harry Truman, I don't know. We need to make sure that we don't let the failures of our presidents dictate our Christianity and obedience day in and day out. We need to make sure that we don't let the failure of our society dictate who we are. And you know where it's going to be harder? Is when we let the failures of our sisters and brothers start dictating that. And that hurts. Because our brothers and sisters are going to make mistakes. I've made mistakes. I've spoken harshly to people and I need to do better. You've done it. I'm assuming, I don't know you well enough, I don't have a spreadsheet of all your problems yet, but I'm assuming since you're human beings that you've done this yourselves, and we've got to do better. And if somebody does that to me, I can't let them dictate my salvation. I have to continue doing the good, even if they are doing verses 10 and 11. And that's hard. That's hard. In Psalm 57, they dug a pit for my way, but they've fallen into it themselves. Now, don't pray that your brother falls into his own pit. But people are going to try to trap you. Worldly traps trap the world. They don't trap us. And we need to rise above it. In verse 14, it says what's going to be happening, even though all this destruction is happening. And this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. The gospel is proclaimed. This is supposed to be a picture of the workers at the end of the chapter, working in the harvest. But every time I look at it, it looks like a bunch of people dancing and having a good time. So I don't know how exactly they're doing that. The gospel of the kingdom is going to be proclaimed. But Jesus, that has nothing to do with what you're talking about, right? Isn't it? When are the stones going to get knocked off? What are the signs of the times? Oh man, it's going to be rough. Don't get distracted. Fake Christs are going to come. They're going to do these sorts of things. They're going to come at you from the outside. Some of you are going to start hating each other or even betraying each other. There's going to be false teachers coming in, and it's going to be really rough. And then he says in verse 12, the lawlessness is going to go up, and your love is going to go down, but you need to endure until the end so that you can be saved. The world's going to get the gospel. It kind of seems like a sidestep, especially to a crowd of Jewish, soon-to-be Christians, right? We're not talking about the world. We're talking about us. And I think that that's a really important thing to think about, is that when Jesus is talking about any trouble, what's the thing that he's still always thinking about? That the world is going to learn. And so here we are in the worst situation of our lives. Let's pretend it. But the kingdom is going to continue. The world is going to learn. And so what can we do in the worst situation of our lives? What can we do to make sure that keeps going on, right? What can we do to make sure that God's greater work continues? In the parable of the tenants, there's that parable about how the master comes back and finds out all his tenants are jerks. What's he going to do? He's going to take it away from them and give it to somebody else. And that's exactly what the story of the destruction of Jerusalem is about. So many of the Jewish people, were they following the Messiah? Were they doing exactly what God had wanted them to do and all the prophets had pointed them to do? So many of them were not. So God said, all right, we're done with Jerusalem, and I'm going to give the kingdom to the world. And that's what the end of Jerusalem is about. That the kingdom is now for the world. And thank God, because that's what we are. We are God's kingdom out in the world. So what does the world learn? Well, you find peace in that spiritual kingdom. And there wasn't a lot of peace in that city. And the people who reject this peace that God is trying to offer to us, the people who reject that and despise that, they're going to be destroyed. And if I start ranting and raving, and if I start being ugly because I'm getting so far down, and I start hurting you and doing these sorts of terrible things, guess what? This might become an awful room, but the kingdom is still going to be the kingdom out there. Now, I'm doing everything I can to not be that kind of a bad person. I don't think I'm being tempted to, but you know what I mean. I'm doing what I can to be good. I see a lot of people here doing what they can to be good and helping despite difficulty and helping despite hurt, physical and emotional and spiritual. And the kingdom's going to continue. And I think we're helping it. Let's make sure we don't hinder it. Because the gospel is bigger and more important than the details about when are the stones going to get knocked off of each other. All right, so skip over the interesting stuff, verses 15 through 44, and just go back to the lessons that Jesus is talking about. I want to close with the parable. These three verses just jumped out at me. It's just so solid and clear, and this is what we need to start thinking about. Lawlessness is going to go up, and love is going to go down. We're going to get disappointed. We're going to get frustrated because all our good efforts are coming to nothing. Well, have a talk with Jeremiah. Okay, that's kind of par for the course. It's okay, guys, if that's how we're feeling. So we need to endure. We need to endure through that so that we will be saved. We need to look for the end. We need to hope for the end. We need to see past the craziness that we're living in right now. And it's crazy. It might be crazy in your house. It might be crazy at your job. It might be crazy in your country, but it's crazy somewhere. And we need to look past that. And that's what we're going to hope on, because the gospel shouts louder than death does. And there's life past this crazy, right? And so then we have this parable of the faithful, wise servant as well as the jerk servant. Psalm. Matthew 24, starting in 45. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. And that would be a great parable. That's not really the point of the parable, is it? It's only half, or maybe even 49% of the parable. But if that wicked servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to beat his fellow servants, and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and he will cut him in pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Jesus is harsh. I mean, Jesus is our loving Savior, but he has some of the strictest, most black and white statements about unloving behavior. And so God has put us on this planet. The stones are going to get knocked off. And he says, get ready, because as the lawlessness increases, your love is going to be pushed down and pushed down and pushed down. You've got to keep your love. You've got to endure and see past this stuff all the way to the end, because it's about the gospel. It's about getting that word out there. And when God shows up, what are you doing? What are you going to look like? What's he going to find? A bunch of people who are worn out? Well, yes, because that's what it says in verse 12. But worn out doesn't mean wrong, right? We are also going to be worn out because we've been working. So the master who finds the servant who was feeding everyone in the household, that servant's probably worn out because he worked all day. So getting worn out or even worn down isn't evil. It isn't wrong. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It's the reality. It's the endurance of staying in this work and sticking to it. Your other options are complaining. My master is delayed. Do you have the right to say that? I mean, talk about opinion. And then you turn and you beat your fellow servants. I haven't really known Christians to physically beat their fellow brothers and sisters, other than, you know, guys wrestling in the backyard, or I've seen lightsabers. I don't know where the lightsaber battles fit into this, to the gospel, but I have seen Christians beat each other with their words. I've seen it happen with brothers and sisters. I've seen it happen in families. And if that's what you are doing, you are breaking the entire point of Matthew 24. Eating and drinking with drunkards? Put in your favorite passion into that one. Sharing with the lusts that are out there, the self-pleasures, the wastes of time, the things that don't build up, but only feed your rotten oak center. We got to stay away from these things, and we got to wake up so that we do not slip into this stuff. The world is much more excited about trying to interpret the signs of the times, and Jesus is saying those signs should wake you up to the reality that you have to look inward and figure out where are your problems, what do you need to work on, and then where are your sister and brothers, not problems, but needs? Let's not call them problems, because then you're just kind of getting judgmental. Where do they need my help? And we need to come together with that sort of thing. This lesson isn't because we're a mess. We'll close by looking at Psalm 123. This lesson is just because this is a reaction I have to the great prophecies about the doom and the gloom that's to come, right? And we need to be reminded of these sorts of things. This morning's lesson was, God thinks that you are a person of value no matter what you think. And God's love is greater than your own self-condemnation. And you have something to contribute to God and to this world and to this life and to this family. Tonight's lesson is, don't step on those people. There are people that are hurting. And if I cause any one of these little ones to stumble, Jesus says, tie a rock around my neck and throw me into the sea. Jesus says that. Not an angry politician. Jesus says that. And we need to be so ready to help each other and care for each other so that we can grow in the way we need to. Let's read Psalm 123. It's just a little psalm, and then the lesson will be yours. Unto thee do I lift up mine eyes, O thou that sits in the heavens. Behold, as the eye of servants looks unto the hand of their master, as the eyes of a maiden unto the hand of her mistress, so our eyes look unto the Lord our God, until he has mercy upon us. Have mercy upon us, O Lord, have mercy upon us, for we are exceedingly filled with contempt. Our soul is exceedingly filled with the scorning of those that are at ease and with the contempt of the proud. It's a sad psalm. But this is the way we feel sometimes. I don't know, maybe you don't feel like it today. It's a nice weather outside. It's a good day. In February, maybe this is the way we're going to feel. Or maybe, despite the weather, someone's been speaking to you harshly and poorly. Or maybe you can recognize that you've been speaking to someone harshly and poorly. We need to cry out to God as servants to our master and say, God, we need your help. And we need to reach out to each other as servants helping fellow servants and helping them to cry out to God for the mercy that they need too. We all want to pray and help each other here. If you need prayer, this is a great opportunity. Let us know. We're going to sing a song. You can come forward and you can ask for prayers. And we're going to pray and give you absolutely everything or anything that you need. If there's anyone who needs that, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing?